These days, when you hear the Star-Spangled Banner at the beginning of a basketball game, you really pay attention. In fact, the patriotic fervor has stirred up an old debate. Do we really have the right song for our national anthem? Turns out this is a more complicated question than you might think. So we asked a music historian to give a short history of patriotic songs. John Hassey is the curator of music at the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History.
In the War of 1812, when the British were bombarding Fort McHenry in Baltimore, a young Baltimore lawyer named Francis Scott Key was so inspired by the sight of the oversized American flag flying through the night despite the intense bombardment that he wrote the lyrics to the Star-Spangled Banner, to an old British tune. In fact, it was an old British drinking song that had been around for a long, long time, the melody had. And that flag, the Star-Spangled Banner, is proudly preserved at the museum where I work, the National Museum of American History, where it's undergoing a $10 million plus restoration.
It's interesting listening to the Star-Spangled Banner because everybody who has ever tried to sing it knows that it's hard to sing. I mean, that's quite a range that you have to have. Is that one of the reasons it didn't catch on right away?
It's very difficult to sing, and it's been controversial for that reason, that musical reason, ever since. And some people aren't too pleased with the militaristic aspect of the lyrics, bombs bursting in air, rockets' red glare. And so there's been a great deal of controversy about that, and there have been efforts to overturn it as the national anthem and substitute other songs.
I know that one of the songs that has been suggested as an alternative was a song called America, written in 1832.
That's right. The lyrics were by an impoverished student at the Andover Theological Seminary in Boston. He was going through a tune book and found a tune that he liked and wrote the lyrics for it. He did not realize that the music was God Save the King because it was written in the tune book under a German title. But it became tremendously popular, even though it's the same as the British song, God Save the King. And there have been suggestions as recently as this fall that this would make a better national anthem than Star-Spangled Banner. But I don't hold out too much hope.
You have a version of that that we could listen to, don't you?
Yes, I have a version by the Robert Shaw Chorale.
You know, another song that seems to me that has been proposed much more often as a replacement for the national anthem is America the Beautiful. Where did that one come from?
America the Beautiful, the lyrics were written by Catherine Lee Bates, who was the head of the English department at Wellesley College in Massachusetts. And she had visited the summit of Pike's Peak in 1893 and was so moved by the beauty from the mountaintop that she wrote this poem.
Oh, beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, for purple mountain majesties above the fruited plain.
Is that a young Sinatra, by the way?
Oh, yes. Yes, 1940s.
Yeah. But it is a very pretty thing, and it sort of commends all our virtues without talking about ways in which we might dominate others.
Yes, it's very non-militaristic. It's non-domineering. It combines the visual, the beautiful, the religious, and the patriotic all into one powerful and majestic set of words. That is my personal choice for the song that should be our national anthem. And there have been efforts to replace the Star-Spangled Banner with America the Beautiful, though, of course, none of them have succeeded.
This has been kind of a touchy subject right along, hasn't it? Patriotism means specific things to different people.
That's right. And sometimes, as Carl Schurz, the senator from Missouri in the 19th century, said, not my country right or wrong, but my country when right to keep it right and when wrong to be set right. And so there is a patriotism that you find in people like Woody Guthrie, who was certainly a minstrel of protest as well as of patriotism.
Yeah. In fact, we're going to get to Woody Guthrie in a minute, but on our way there, maybe we ought to listen to God Bless America, which I think Woody Guthrie had some thoughts about. But who do you have for us to listen to singing God Bless America?
Kate Smith, the woman that Irving Berlin wrote it for in 1938, or rewrote it for. He'd actually written it in 1918 during World War I for a Ziegfeld-type review, but shelved it because he didn't feel it was appropriate for that kind of lighthearted entertainment, and kept it on the shelf until 1938, the eve of World War II.
Then this is one that a lot of people think maybe ought to be the national anthem too, isn't it?
Particularly since 9/11, there's actually been a bill introduced in Congress to make this our national anthem. Incidentally, Berlin turned the royalties over to the Girl and Boy Scouts of America, and they have made $6 million from this song. It's an easy-to-sing song, it's easy to remember, and so it has certain virtues. It's the song that's part of the national fabric.
Woody Guthrie, listening to Kate Smith singing that, had some pretty, well, profound reaction, didn't he?
Well, I think he decided that he wanted to write a more populist piece in response to Irving Berlin's. And so the result was This Land Is Your Land, which he had completed by the early 1940s. And the part that you hear sung in schools and by kids is the part that is totally non-controversial, from the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. That's the part that we all know. But if you listen to the song all the way through, the way Guthrie wrote it, it starts getting into some other kind of territory. For example, verse 6 says, "In the shadow of the steeple I saw my people. By the relief office I seen my people. As they stood there hungry, I stood there asking, is this land made for you and me?" So it becomes quite pointed as it proceeds.
There was a big high wall there that tried to stop me. Sign was painted, said private property. But on the back side, it didn't say nothing. This land was made for you and me.
What do you think it is that makes a good patriotic song?
I would say a sentiment. Strength, imagery, singability, and memorability.
There have been some songs that, that you knew were never going to be adopted as the national anthem, that I guess you could call them patriotic songs, but they have different feelings. Phil Oakes, for instance, was a critic of American policy during the Vietnam years, but I think clearly loved America at the same time. He had a song called The Draft Dodger Rag.
Yes, it came from 1965, and though he was staunchly anti-war, I detect in this lyric some satirizing of the man he's singing about.
Oh, I'm just a typical American boy from a typical American town. I believe in God and Senator Dodd and I keep an old Castro down. And when it came my time to serve, I knew better dead than red. But when I got to my old draft board, buddy, this is what I said. Sarge, I'm only 18. I got a ruptured spleen and I always carry a purse. I've got eyes like a bat and my feet are flat. And my asthma's getting worse. Yes, think of my career, my sweetheart.
That's a
dear,
funny song.
I played that more than a few times when I was in school. It is funny.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, but it's not going to be sung as the national anthem, is it?
No way, no how.
Phil Oakes with the Draft Dodger Rag. We talked with John Hassey, the music curator at the National Museum of American History.